easy to do at this point. We usually say that when a great devotee leaves, that it's a mixture of sweetness and bitterness. So that's certainly true, because he's gone to Krishna, and we feel happy for him. But then again, he was with Krishna even when he was here in this world, and that was very clear. He was a brave person. Prabhupada was a brave person. In fact, he wasn't brave, he was fearless. But on this day, which is one of the days I least look forward to in the year, I don't generally, personally, don't think of the sweetness or the bitterness, except that almost every year for the last 20 years I've been in Prabhupada's room at this time, when the place where he actually left. And that time was 7:22. The time that's just passed, of course, it's 2.5 hours earlier in Vrindavan. And right now the devotees are having kirtan in Prabhupada's room, and his bed is decorated with flowers, and a picture is there, and next to it is a picture of Krishna Balaram. And there's, you know, there's flowers and flowers everywhere, and the devotees are in a very somber mood and chanting in a very, very soft way. When in Prabhupada's last days, the devotees would have kirtan continuously in his room, but they would play very, very, very softly with no instruments, practically speaking. Prabhupada was in a very internal mood. It's impossible to understand, for me to understand what his consciousness was like, because he was on a different level. In the last days, Yadubara Prabhu asked Prabhupada, "Are you feeling pain?" And Prabhupada answered, "What do you think?" And Yadubara said, "No." And Prabhupada didn't respond. There's different ways, of course, to think about Prabhupada. There's a tendency to think that he was such a transcendental person, that he wasn't in this world and nothing affected him, and Krishna told him everything. And I think there's to go left, to go right. And I think there's validity in thinking in that way. But I see Prabhupada more that he was such a hero, and he was so surrendered, and did whatever he had to do, whether he felt pain, whether he didn't feel pain. He was so surrendered to serving his Guru Maharaj, to serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to serving all of his disciples, all those who were depending completely upon him. And there he was at this time. He was so powerful, and he was, we all conceived of him as unstoppable. And whatever little strength and bravery any of us had, it was all based on his strength and his bravery. And there was no concept that he could actually leave this world. Really, there is no concept. Of course, we were young, and Prabhupada didn't foster that type of concept in us that he was going to go on forever in that same body, which was transcendental, but not transcendental in the same way that a fully spiritual body is transcendental, but transcendental in the way that a gold-plated box is gold. And indeed, his body was transcendental, but it wasn't like the eternal spiritual body in that sense, which for it lives forever, but it was gold-plated in that sense, and it was very transcendental. It was very, very soft and fragrant, because every day he would take a massage with mustard oil and sandalwood, and there was always the fragrance of mustard oil and sandalwood, or mostly the sandalwood in his presence. And his body was very soft, and he was very, and he could be very, very strong too, because he was a general also, and he had a mission to accomplish, and he was like Lord Rama with his monkey soldiers in a sense, and he had to tell them what to do, and he had to push, because he knew that there's no telling what was going to happen after he left this world. So he really wanted, because he had seen that in his Guru Maharaj's institution. He had seen the fighting that took place and the uncoordinated activities, and that made him, of course, was very, very, very disheartening, because there was such power in his Guru Maharaj's mission in the presence of his Guru Maharaj, and then it became broken into little pieces. And Prabhupada had seen that. So he knew that it may not go on in the same way. So he, in his presence, he pushed and pushed and pushed. And he said, "My Guru Maharaj is pushing me, and I am pushing you." So all of Prabhupada's disciples and all of Prabhupada's fellows feel that push of Prabhupada. And there was no question. Prabhupada mostly didn't let on when things were difficult. He didn't let on, meaning that he didn't complain. At least most of the devotees weren't aware of it. He didn't complain all the time how difficult it is in this problem. There's once, when I was teaching Gurukula many years ago in Kidanagari, that Dr. Chaitanya Mataji had taken a Vyasa Puja book of Prabhupada's that had all many, many black and white photos of Prabhupada, and she had made one chart, not a chart, a poster with all these photos. And I think my favorite one was one of Prabhupada. It was like this. And it was a very internal mood. And I liked that very much. And then once His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj came, who had spent so much time in Prabhupada's personal presence as his servant, and he just looked at the photos and he said, "This is what this one was, this is what this photo was, and this is what this photo was, and this is what this photo was. This is what was happening." And when he came to that photo that I liked very much, Prabhupada, on a desk like this, he said, "This is when such and such leading devotee left the movement." So I had been thinking Prabhupada was internally absorbed, and he was internally absorbed, but there was a an external cause for that. And yet Prabhupada was unflagging, and he kept going and going with the mood of devotion and service. It was like the, in my mind, it was like the Brahma Gopis. That's how I think of it, is that they would do anything for Krishna, and everything that they did do was for Krishna's pleasure. So, Prabhupada, so many of his activities were beyond my ability to understand, but everything was just done for Krishna's pleasure. And he didn't retire. He kept saying in 1972 in Hong Kong, even he spoke about retiring and maybe that he would leave or something like that. But many places he would do that. But he never retired. He may have been tired, but never retired. But he didn't, he just kept on going because of his devotion, because of his love, because of his surrender, because of his service, serving mood. And that's the essence of our relationship with Krishna, is a serving mood. This is taught by Sri Advaita Acharya, explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The essence of everyone's relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan and Vaikuntha is they have him in the center and they just want to please him, and it's effortless. Effortless, not in the sense that it is not difficult, but effortless in the sense it's like breathing. It's who they are. That's the nature of their loving relationship with him. And Prabhupada, that was Prabhupada. And his spirit was what? It was preaching. He was just so inspired to preach, to spread Krishna consciousness, to spread the holy name. He was just so inspired. His consciousness, it didn't doubt. And his vision, of course, I can't say exactly what his vision was, but his vision was that this world is in a very dangerous position. And in some ways, we couldn't see it, at least I couldn't see it so clearly. But now I can see it very clearly. Such a dangerous condition the world is in. I think everyone is feeling the pressure of it. If you don't look at the news, you don't feel it maybe, but the world is in a very dangerous position. There's so much tension, there's so much polarization, there's so much ignorance. And no one, everyone is rushing here and rushing there, but no one has any idea why they're going, why they're rushing from place to place, and is there any purpose to this? Is there any purpose to my existence? No one thinks like this even. Practically speaking. So this is ignorance. And then one day you're old and all your plans, all your dreams. And it does happen. It must happen. And what if one may have built an empire like Alexander the Great, but what is the use of it? What is the purpose of life? You may have your name and you may be remembered. So Prabhupada saw that kind of ignorance, and he saw everyone, the basic ignorance and the basic anxiety was the identification with the body, which is so difficult to break. And yet Prabhupada, he spoke about that again and again. And he didn't give up. And he pushed and pushed. It may have been difficult, but it was his, like his breathing. He was, this was his life, his service. There was no difference, there was no duality. This is my life and this is my service. This was him. This was who he was. So when this day came in 1977, it was inconceivable, because it was all in fact going on by his power, by his potency, by his strength. So it was really inconceivable. And most amazingly, everyone of his disciples, even though many of them never really even spoke to Prabhupada personally, some of them never even saw Prabhupada. Some saw Prabhupada just once or twice sitting on the Vyasasana in a temple when he visited. But everyone felt they had a personal relationship with him. And everyone felt that what they were doing it for him. It's quite astounding. That's empowerment. And those who had some time with him personally, and as Dr. Trini, like he was saying today, when Prabhupada got off the Vyasasana, just some sweet little exchange, and he was no longer the Singha Guru, the founder of Acharyas, but he was also the sweetest personal person. When he would see Dagatarini, he would always remember to ask how her mother and father were, because he would always ask. He met them. How many people did he meet as he traveled the world? But he'd always ask her that. And so many little things that we can remember, and sometimes those remembrances come as little stories or little pastimes, but sometimes those remembrances come in the way that one can actually experience the presence of Prabhupada and how unique and sweet and attractive that presence was. And how his movement had to confront his absence. It was a very difficult time. And but yet, movement is still somehow going on, and preaching is going on, and now as just A.T. mentioned early in the day, he said that now the disciples of Prabhupada are reaching near the endings of their mortal coil, and then the test will be how much the pushing, so to speak, the urgency is passed on, how effectively we've been able to pass that on to those who will succeed us. And yes, it will happen. I don't know where it's written, but this is one little pastime when, maybe in Bhakti Ratnakara, when someone goes to Ekachakragram and he sees, this is years after Nityananda Prabhu had left, that's his birthplace, and he sees an old man sitting under a tree and just crying and crying and crying. And that sage associate devotee, yes, what are you crying about? He said, Nityananda has left. So when that devotee, he was remembering that for several years. And when that devotee who had come to Ekachakra saw him, he just thought, you have actually seen Nityananda? You actually have seen him? So you've seen someone who has seen him? And Jaitrini right now has a ring on her finger that we were in Hong Kong and it was a very difficult time as we were struggling, and Prabhupada called me into the room and he said, how is she doing? And I said, I don't think very well. He said, call her in.
Case.
Huh?
You said she's a marginal case.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
I didn't say that.
You did too.
Yeah. We can have an argument about it.
On this side.
Yeah. So in any case, he said, call her in. So I brought her in. She was actually by the door listening in. But she didn't.
Huh?
I
was behind the door.
Maybe on the other side of the door.
Quite hopeless.
Yeah.
Hiding in behind the door in the wall.
Because Prabhupada's presence was like the, it was like being the presence of the sun. It was very, it was hot. You couldn't be in a different mood. It was like being with fire, you know. You felt very discordant, like someone singing terribly off key or playing cartels at a beat or something like that. You felt very discordant. So at that moment, Chaitanya felt somewhat discordant. So he said, bring her in. So I brought her in. And he just went like this, took the ring from his finger.
Held it out like that. There's a big picture of Gopal.
Not him. The other one.
Hey.
Can I go for
it? He took the ring from his finger like this, and then he held it out like this, and he looked at me, and I was crumbling away. He said, Jagatrini, Jagatarini. And I went, yeah, this is for you. And I went, oh no.
Oh no.
And I kind of reached out and grabbed it. I didn't know what to do. And down, and then I turned to you and said, what do I do? And you said, put it on your finger and never take it off. I was in trouble at that stage.
But that wasn't the Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasasana. That was Prabhupada, the kindly grandfather. You know, when he wasn't in his general mode.
And he was trying to rectify something and it was deep. And so it was painful. And I didn't, actually was sitting outside thinking, I don't think I'll go in to see him because I think my spiritual life's finished. Mm. And I was just thinking, well, I can ring my mother. Contact her.
Ring.
I could probably get a
ring.
I could get. I could go back to university. I could do something. I was sitting thinking like that because you know he had been very, very strong with me because I was very willful, and then I was just thinking, and it was as if little pieces of verses that we learnt when we first got married in Hong Kong, just came like phrases in my mind, like surrender unto me, I'll protect you, do not hesitate. Just different phrases, not even a full verse, just started floating through my mind. And then when I saw them, heard them, you were in the room with Srila Prabhupada and he was playing his dictation from that day of the 10th, of the 19th chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was talking about how the spiritual master gives the seed and the plant grows, but if one commits the elephant offense, it's all trampled, it's all destroyed. And then I realized that's what's...
What
had happened. And but you know, I just didn't feel like going near him again. Not because he wouldn't welcome me, but because I just didn't have any energy to do it. And you kept coming out because you were enthusiastic, and you'd come from his bedroom where he was sitting and passed through the lounge room where I was sitting to the office where Satsurit Maharaj was the secretary, and you'd come back with important and keep saying to me, come in and see him, and I would go, no, it's okay. And then he said something, there was something he said, I don't even know if it's in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, do you think that the devotees, the so-called devotees, in other words, you're critical of the devotees, then you can give up their company. That I picked up my ears there because I thought the devotees were so-called devotees. And he said, but you cannot give up the association of the spiritual master. And then I started to sort of, it was like I was getting a diagnosis of what was my condition. And so I came around to outside the door, and hid behind the door, and you came in and out, and you said, go in, and I was like, I can't.
And Papa Durfee calls you.
Yeah. And I had to go in. And then he gave me the ring, and I knew he'd clamped me. I was sort of feeling sullen and restless and angry and confused and so many things. And it was like when you're feeling like that, you don't want anyone to sort of pin you down because you're turbulent. But he had done that, and he knew he had done that. From then on, things started to get better. It was very strange to be having trouble in Srila Prabhupada's presence, because all the stories are kind of heroic. I did this and I did that, and he gave this and I won that. But my story was so different than that. Trouble, much less trouble. And then my Krishna consciousness picked up in later years. I mean, I did the effort, you know, I made the attempt to go to Hong Kong, made the attempt to start a Krishna conscious marriage, I made the attempt to preach and so on, but like you were saying this morning, how there's the idea and then there's the hard work, and each attempt I made, I felt like, oh, I didn't have the strength to do it, and they all went down, up, down, up, down. I couldn't reach I couldn't keep it up. And Prabhupada, he was relentless. You committed everything, if you know what I mean. Like, it was not one morning you say, I'll wake up at 4:30 in the morning and from now on, you know, I feel good about myself. It was like you committed for your life. And I was young and I didn't think, you know, twice about committing. But then as the truth of the strength you have to do the things, and then Prabhupada would add more. It felt like I sagged under the weight. That was my perception at the time. And then later, for me, I realized that I had had, it felt like a vaccine, an inoculation, that I had tried to leave, I had tried to separate myself, I tried different things while he was present, and he had administered guidance and advice on those occasions. And so when he was gone and people tried to leave and they tried to do the things that I had already done, they didn't have him there to tell them what they should or shouldn't do. They made their decisions based on with his absence. And whereas for me, I had these indelible responses to my my, I don't know, confusion or my lack of Krishna conscious strength. I had his responses there, and it was almost like there's no question of leaving, no matter how hellish life was or everything was. There's no question of leaving. I did that already, you know, in a small way, and now you have to. So I saw that in the long term the strength was coming, in the short term it was too much. Prabhupada was so powerful and I was so little and immature and exuberant, and I couldn't hold the weight. But the weight was meant to be held for a lifetime, and during that lifetime you grow and grow and grow and grow until you get to the point where you can hold it to some degree, not ever like you would dream or
not that. Not ever like you dream, it's just
a matter of time.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Because back then you wouldn't conceive of having the strength of doing that, making a gallery or whatever like that. So it was inconceivable then, but it has happened over time by mercy and endeavor both.
And then the difficult beginning turned out to be such a blessing, because I always look back and think, what a difficult beginning, and now look what's here, and there are devotees coming, and we're using this facility, and young people are coming, new generation are coming, and it's in his hands what he wants. But I feel like I can contribute now in a way I couldn't have imagined then. And therefore I look at other people and think all the time, you don't know your future, you don't know what amazing things you'll be able to do. Just keep going, keep going. Because that's what I did. And people look at you when you're old and think you must have always been sort of experienced, but you weren't. You were a beginner and you moved on. Like Brian was saying in the temple when he said, when Prabhupada said the beginner devotee, the lowest level, the middle, and the high level devotee, and he'd always emphasize the high level devotee, the Uttamadhikari, and they have no doubts, no fear, and the low level, and I always thought of it as low level, like low. They have doubts and their faith is weak, and I think, oh yeah, the low level. Now I don't see low, middle, and high. I see like beginner, more experienced, very experienced. And that's a natural progression rather than how I felt then, low, got to get out of this low level category.
Well, one reason was because there was I say this many times, that when I was 21, I was one of the oldest devotees. And there was a group of about six devotees or so who were 6 years older than me. But there was only about six of them. And then there was Prabhupada, who was 76, somewhat years old, like a grandfather, and there was no one in between. So there was no beginning, middle, and end. There was just
beginning and end. Beginning.
But one of the tricky things was that Prabhupada couldn't let us think that we were just beginners. Because, first of all, because we had knowledge, but it wasn't realized. It was theoretical, but he wanted something done. He wanted the movement spread. So he instead of emphasizing that we were beginners, he emphasized that everyone was a rascal. Other than they were all rascals. And then I noticed in 1976 in Mayapur, it sort of turned. He shifted. I really noted it. Because it was always they were rascals, but at least starting in 1976 in Mayapur, we were rascals.
I always felt I was a rascal all along. The discussion seemed to be.
Yeah. And I remember that one time he was in Melbourne, he was talking to the devotees, I guess this was in 1975, and he was saying how wonderful they were because they were compassionate. Because there was so much ignorance, and they were feeling so much compassion, and they were helping everyone, and I just felt, wonder who he's talking about. Not me, certainly. There was no compassion, because you have to have experienced the pain to be compassionate. You have to have experienced the pain and not experiencing the pain, or experiencing truth or great depth, and then you see those, and you're not experiencing that. And you see those who are still experiencing it, you want to pull them up, and that's the softness of heart that's required to do that is called compassion. And it's compassion is a descending process from someone who has to someone who doesn't have. So I remember this cringing inside when he said how compassionate all the devotees were.
A lot of time that his definition of a devotee was too grand for what you felt you were yourself. You know, a devotee has no enemies, a devotee is not envious, a devotee is always focused fully on the Lord, a devotee is fully surrendered and let go.
that's how he writes, but that's how he spoke. So we were thinking perhaps that we were those devotees, but actually we wanted to serve a devotee, and that we were aspiring to have those qualities, but we weren't mature enough to know our position or ignorance again, because there was no one, a next generation above us, or a next generation above them. You must be so tired, yes?
How little now?
Little?
Yeah.
Do you need to lie down now?
You need a lap? Yeah. Your mother only has one with her. If you only brought one lap, you can have the other.
You can come and lie here if you want.
Yes.
Sure.
Come on. She's
grandmother. Another grandmother. There was no one to put the difficulties of life, devotional life, or the combination of living a devotional life and the material part of your life, so to speak, there was no one to put the challenges of that in perspective to a whole life, except for Prabhupada, because he was the only elder in the movement. So it was very. It was somewhat harsh, but because of Prabhupada being there, it had a special potency. Yeah, he was doing everything, in fact. And that's, and when the, now the devotees speak like that, that it's Prabhupada who's doing things, and we're just assisting and trying to serve, but
But devotees at that time were often too young to think like that, so they thought we were doing things. And then when Prabhupada left, then things tended to collapse because it wasn't them who was doing things. It was Prabhupada, his potency, and serving that potency, serving his love, serving his devotion.
And then people began to fight, and then some people began to go to their own heads and do things that were outlandish, and projects fell apart. And I remember I was just thinking, we were chanting, the grief that I felt when Itanagari fell apart. The cows were no longer taken care of, no one was farming anymore, the Gurukul fell apart, all the ideas fell apart.
All the dreams.
And they fell apart logically. It wasn't from meanness. They didn't have next steps. They didn't have maturity to take them to the next step. And the next step couldn't do it. And perhaps in 100 years, over 100 years, you'll see them all revive again, like in a garden that recycles itself and comes back. But it was very shocking to watch it all disintegrating, because it all depended on a group. So when this one pulled out, and that one went here, and that one had to go there, suddenly it was like you couldn't hold it anymore. It collapsed. Until there was a Sunday feast where they would have a sign at the end of the table and said, whatever money you put into this donation basket will be our next Sunday feast. And sometimes it was night and was there. Sometimes it was just Khichdi.
I missed that.
That was in the mid-90s when I went back.
Yeah, now it's taken another incarnation. It's, you know, something different, but it's going strongly, but in a different mood. Yes, so...
So it's like a garden. The garden has every season. So next season it could be fabulous. This season it's not doing so well.
So what is it? What does that depend on?
Well, I think the first thing it depends on is a gardener just watching gardens. Depends on a person who says, "I'm going to stay and make this garden work," and then they seek
what
their
is the,
commitment.
What is
they
the,
seek others.
Help. What would cause the commitment?
Yes, a dedication.
What causes that?
Love and the aliveness of their love is alive. It's not a past experience. It's active, and they can't leave it because they just can't leave it.
So what causes that?
Strength of relationship.
Reciprocation?
With?
The person you are in love with?
And perhaps added to that is a vision of the importance of what you're doing. The negative, the
and everyone,
world,
everyone,
saying
everyone
how
is,
bad it is.
Everyone is looking for everyone something larger than themselves to live for. Because a life lived just for oneself is really meaningless. And nowadays, that's the lack of knowledge. Everyone is living for themselves, and everyone is just so empty inside because there's no meaning living just for yourself. So well, to live for just material selfish pleasures or shopping or buying the next whatchamacallit, it's just so empty. You know, it doesn't So you need a, and Prabhupada gave us that vision, a bigger vision too, and then, but it wasn't just a vision. He was carrying the sweetness of the vision achieved on a personal level with him. If you know what I mean? He was carrying with him the sweetness, and everyone wanted to taste the sweetness of being with him, which was the sweetness that he was carrying, and that sweetness, as far as I ever understood, was the sweetness of Sri Vrindavan Dham. He was carrying that with him. And that's the sweetness that we're longing for, that will fill up. He gave that vision, and he gave a mission, and he gave something to do to attain that. And he personified that. That was what Prabhupada was. He personified that.
Yes, he was a master. He could master it. He had it. You could experience it. You could taste it from him. It wasn't just an ideal or a theory or a mental achievement. You said personified it.
And it was carrying it. When we traveled with Prabhupada from Australia in 1976, from Melbourne, then to Fiji, and then to Hawaii, and then after that, we left Prabhupada's association in Hawaii, and we went to Los Angeles, then went to Dallas, Texas, and for the first time, I was asked to do some deity worship on a real altar with regular installed deities, and without any thought, the moment I walked on that altar, there was the sweetness of Vrindavan was there, because it was Radha Kala Janji. And the moment I walked on the altar, the experience was that this is just like being with Prabhupada, without any preconceived thought, and he carried. And then I understood Prabhupada's secret. And he carried Vrindavan with him in a very, a very sweet form. So on this day we, you're going? Well, what do we do? We miss him.